Now, I forgot to say that next Sunday morning, there is the guest service. Very good. And that means that morning and evening congregation members are warmly urged to invite somebody to a service which is especially thinking of the outsider. Did you all get a card on your chair? Please use it. You may not be very good at giving invitations, but you may be able to just pass that on to somebody and write in the details and offer them a lift and make that a service of much power and blessing. And please pray for it during the week. I don't know what subject Dick will be speaking on. He is away on an officer's Christian fellowship weekend, but he will be our speaker. Yes, I'd greatly appreciate it. Thank you, Charles. Now, it's a strange paradox that there have never been more magazines on bookstalls on how to have a good home, but there have never been more broken homes. Is that not true? It's also a strange paradox that there have never been more time-saving devices in the home, but we've never been more pushed for time. And many people, Sunday by Sunday, look exhausted from the pace of life. I don't know what you get up to on Saturday evenings, but many look exhausted on Sunday mornings. And then I think it's also true that there have never been so many ideas for entertaining being pushed around. But hospitality, good old hospitality, has never been so rare. Is that also not true? Some people have homes that are like an oasis. People love to gather, and they're always glad they do. And I'm sure you can think of homes like that. What is it that makes a good home? What is it that makes a good house? Is your home an oasis or a sandhill? Is it open or closed? I think we need to rethink our homes. And I think we need to because the Bible says we need to. And our text comes from the passage we read as the epistle reading, 1 Peter chapter 4, verse 9, practice hospitality ungrudgingly to one another. Romans 12 says the same thing, practice hospitality. Hebrews 13, don't forget to show hospitality. Now, this is the third in a series called Seven Modest Ministries, in case you're new this morning. We'll break the series for next week. But this is the third. I wonder if you were here for the first two. 2 weeks ago, we looked at the ministry of wisdom. Wisdom is a God-given gift, which is given to all or offered to all members of a congregation so that they can see the best path to the best goal. And then last week, Dick Lucas spoke on the ministry of faith. Again, it's a God-given gift for all Christians. It's a gift to take godly action. It's a conviction about God. It's a confidence in God. And it blesses everybody. And Paul says in 1 Corinthians 12 that one is given this gift, not because only one is given. Listen carefully to this. This is a common mistake. People think that because Paul says one is given the gift, only one is given the gift. It's as if we are like little children who've turned up to get balloons at the fair, and the last balloon has just gone to the child before us. And we must stand there pitifully saying, well, I don't have one. It's not like that. Paul says one is given the gift because anyone is given the gift to help the rest. And that's why at any time anyone may have a word of wisdom or may set an example of faith and bless the rest. And that's our experience, and that's the New Testament. So we come today to a much less controversial and even more modest but just as powerful ministry, and it's the ministry of hospitality. And what I want to do this morning is to look first of all at our verse under the heading Home Rule. I then want to look at the Bible background under the heading Home Base. I then want to say a word on some principles for being a hospitable person under the heading Home Guard. And finally, some practical ideas under the heading Homework. So if you forget nothing, if you remember nothing, you'll at least remember that word home. And if you don't like it, you may be homesick. So first of all, home rule. Home rule. Now our text, please look at it with me, is 1 Peter chapter 4 verse 9. Practice hospitality ungrudgingly to one another. But the section begins at verse 7. Now just to make sure you're awake, let's read verse 7 together. The end of all things is at hand, therefore keep sane and sober for your prayers. Now that is a terrific rocket to any home builder, isn't it? Most home builders assume that the end of all things is far away. Most home builders are just getting started. They are working for permanence, not for finishing. Most homeowners are just paying off their mortgage and they're putting their new floors in, or they're fixing up their plumbing or their wiring, or they're doing brickwork, or they're breaking a wall to make a bigger room, or they're doing more painting or papering or carpeting or gardening. And then, says Peter, the end of all things is at hand. Now, the Christian is meant to live in the light of verse 7, that the end of all things is at hand. The reason is that Christian building is going to be measured by fire, not by comfort. But the tragedy is that most Christians, sucked in completely by the attitudes of the world, build just for comfort. At least Scripture tells us that all things are going to come to an end. I don't know whether we have yet believed it, but that's what Scripture tells us. And Peter says, since quantity is not at our disposal, we must start to work for quality friendships. So he goes on in these verses to say, for example, in verse 8, hold unfailing your love for one another. Now, I think it's perfectly clear that time is not at our disposal. Time goes very fast. I've come to the end of 3 years, nearly, in this country, and I look at the street that I live in, and the relationships are exceptionally weak. The only time I've ever been in the houses in our street, once to go through the house, to get over their fence, to get into our back door, and once to go in to get our three-year-old back, who had wandered in next door. She is our door-to-door evangelist, and she manages to get into homes that I can never get into. Now, this also came home to me when I was reading this little book. And the lady in the book says that when she was about to move home, she realized as she was leaving her home that she had never put down roots and formed relationships. She had seldom offered hospitality because, she says, I had felt inadequate. And now I was leaving and I had given up opportunities that would never present themselves again. As our plane took off, she says, I vowed that whenever I was in the future, wherever I was in the future, whether it was for 3 days, 3 months, or 3 years, I would use the time to extend myself towards other people. To live in a temporary state of mind, knowing you're going to move on somewhere else, makes a very significant point. Jesus lived his life moving around from place to place. His 3 years of public ministry saw him constantly traveling, and yet he touched lives everywhere he went. Now, I wonder if you do. Peter says, 1 Peter chapter 4, verse 7, the end of all things is at hand. We live in the light of the end. Our time is short, whatever we do. And then he goes on in verses 8 and 9 to say, we must make the best of friendships. Now, this is obviously not a call to have a sloppy home or to neglect walls that are falling down. But look at the two parts of verse 7. First, the end of all things is at hand. Second, keep sane and sober for your prayers. Now, the person who has the very best perspective in life is the person who holds these two halves of the verse together. They have one eye on the end, and they are on their knees. And the very, very best perspective in life comes from the person who spends time on their knees with an eye to the end. Isn't that true? Same author, second letter, chapter 3, 2 Peter. Since all these things are to be dissolved, what sort of persons ought you to be? It's a very good question. Since all these things are to be dissolved, what sort of persons ought you to be? And when we start to have this perspective, then we will press on loving one another. And the reason is that any other policy is a waste of time. That's why verse 8, hold unfailing your love for one another, since love covers a multitude of sins. Now, I wonder if there is somebody here this morning who has a deep grudge against somebody else, a jealousy or a resentment. I wonder if you've been let down by somebody, or you've been hurt, or you've been badly treated. And I wonder if you've already told 5 people how terrible the other person is, and it hasn't done any good. So then you tell 10 people more, and that doesn't seem to do any good. And so then you tell 20 people, and that doesn't seem to do any good. And you begin to learn what we all slowly learn, and that is that bitterness and resentment and grudges eat away at us. And they start to corrode us spiritually, personally, and we rot from inside. Now the answer is in verse 8. In the light of the end, and in the light of being on our knees, we are to hold unfailing our love for one another. That means we're to make a decision to love people. That means that we're to choose to love people. That means that we're to plan it. Verse 9, practice hospitality. Now, literally, that little phrase, practice hospitality, means be lovers of strangers. I don't know whether you love strangers. Seems to me to be not a natural inclination, but that's what we're to be. We're to be lovers of strangers. We're to choose deliberately to love the stranger. And then in verse 10, Peter says, as each has received a gift, employ it. Verse 11, if you speak, as one who utters words of God. If you render service, as one who renders it by the strength which God supplies. Reason, that God may be glorified. Now the gift, verse 10, comes from God's grace. The purpose of the gift, verse 11, is for the glory of God. Well, that's our home rule. We are to practice hospitality. Then I want to look, secondly, at biblical background under the heading home base. Now, if you open up your Old Testament, you find that the Old Testament patriarchs particularly were very hospitable. That's because it was a natural thing to do. Abraham, Genesis 18, welcomes the strangers into his tent and gives them a good meal because he was a nomadic character. And to show hospitality was natural. Elijah went to stay with a widow. And her food supply was miraculously preserved. She probably saved her life by being hospitable. Elisha stayed with a wealthy woman and was able to bring her son back to life. But the real rod that ran through the Old Testament was the Jewish law, which was that we were to look after the people who came within our gates, the sojourner or the stranger. And when we get to the New Testament, we find that in the light of that rule, Jesus expected that his disciples would receive hospitality when he sent them out. So the lesson we had, which Helen read for us, was of Jesus sending the disciples out 2 by 2, and he said to them, when you go, take up the hospitality you're offered, and if you're not offered it, well, wipe the dust off your feet. Because you ought to expect it. When we come to the New Testament letters, we discover that hospitality is an important mark of leadership. 1 Timothy 3, the bishop must be hospitable. Titus 1, the bishop must be hospitable. Now, just this week I've received an invitation from the Bishop of London to go to his home. So he is a hospitable bishop. But every leader is meant to have as one of his marks hospitality. And then further in the letters, the widows on the roll were expected to be hospitable. They were expected to receive strangers. It was probably a two-edged blessing. They would receive company, and at the same time, they would render a service. And often, widows are the most hospitable, the most mothering, the most caring. At the same time, it must have been a spiritual blessing for widows to be hospitable, because it would prevent them from being not only lonely, but self-preoccupied. So the New Testament tells us that the Christian leader must be hospitable, that the widow ought to be hospitable, but then we find in Romans, 1 Peter and Hebrews that every Christian is to be hospitable. In exactly the same way that every Christian is to love others, every Christian is to be hospitable. So there are three New Testament authors who command it. Please note that. Paul says it. Peter says it, and the writer to the Hebrews says it, and they don't make it optional. Paul says in Romans, pursue hospitality. Peter says in his first letter, be hospitable. The writer to the Hebrews says, don't neglect or don't forget to show hospitality. Now, if we ever wanted a good home base for being hospitable, to get a command from Paul, Peter, and the author to the Hebrews is as good as we could want. And that leads me to say, thirdly, something on principles of hospitality, and under the heading Home Guard. Now, I wonder if you could just cast your mind to the home that you like to be invited to. I immediately think of a few homes that I like to be invited to, and particularly, I suppose, parental homes for me back in Sydney. Kathy's parents are particularly hospitable. Her mother is a particularly good cook. And it's just a delight to sit back in a luxurious chair and have cake pushed in your face from all directions. But they are particularly hospitable. Therefore, it's a special delight to call in at their home. Now, it may be for you that when you think of the home you like to go to, it's family. We get special care from our parents. It may be that you actually like a house more than you like the people. So it may be that it's just possible that you like to go to somebody's house because they have a tennis court, or a swimming pool, or a nice garden, or a good library. But generally, I think we like houses because of the people. Now, this is a very obvious point, and you will probably doze as I say this, but I think we forget it. Hospitality really is about people. Whether it's an attractive invitation, we received an attractive invitation to go to lunch yesterday, and Gareth and Scylla and Kathy and I went up for lunch with the Catherwoods up near Cambridge, and it was an attractive invitation, and it was a most hospitable afternoon. But it was largely because of the people. In fact, it was almost entirely because of the people. And then again, people may be the reason for an unattractive invitation. You may remember the story where George Bernard Shaw was invited by a very pompous and difficult lady to come to her home. And he received the invitation, and the card said, Lady Smythe Tompkins Jones, or whatever her name was, at home, 4 p.m., October 17. And George Bernard Shaw wrote back, George Bernard Shaw likewise. The critical factor is people. But I think that a great deal of hospitality gets missed, and perhaps missed at St. Helens, because many potential hosts and hostesses think deep down that it really is about performance. So the food gets set out in the most elaborate and extravagant way, and the house is tidied ad infinitum, and the cutlery and the napkins and the wine and everything is absolutely perfect, but you end up sometimes having a meeting which is more clockwork than Christian. And sometimes it's even more tense than easy. Now, we need to redress this balance. Hospitality, the root word, is a love for strangers. It's a love for people. And it would be better to put more water in your soup and invite two people back on the spur of the moment, if it's possible, than to wait 2 years for that perfect meal. Isn't that obvious? But the more we go on thinking that hospitality is about a special performance, the more we'll go on missing those people-loving opportunities. It is also true, I think, that some performance-based hospitality is just hidden pride. It's really just a subtle form of showing off. So if we will learn to concentrate on people, love the people, care about the people, welcome the people, we will find that even our watery soup is better than that steak that took 2 years to get ready. Second principle is wrapped up in the Christian word love. And love, as you know, is a choosing to bless rather than a feeling. And that's why I think in Romans and 1 Peter and Hebrews, every time the call comes to be hospitable, lying next to it is a verse to love one another. And every Christian who's been a Christian for more than a few weeks gets to learn that love has to do with action rather than feeling. Now, I know this isn't always easy. I know that it is not always easy in hospitality. Some people are very difficult. For some people, conversation seems to be like their blood. They only give it up under great pressure. There are some people who have children that make Indiana Jones look sleepy by comparison. There are some people who have children who make Conan the Barbarian look like Bambi the Deer. There are some people who eat their soup so loudly you could get up and dance to it. I understand the shortest book just released is the Australian Book of Table Manners. So there are some people who it is difficult to have round. But Christian love means acting for the other person. And you'll notice that Peter says that we're to do it without murmuring. Now, I think it's interesting that Jesus, when he was washing the feet at the Last Supper, also washed Judas's 2 feet. In Mark chapter 6, the passage from which our gospel came, Jesus receives the news that John the Baptist has just been beheaded. Now, that must have been exceptionally painful news, not only because John the Baptist was the cousin of Jesus, but also because it was a sign that the opposition was hotting up and capable of anything. And it would have been perfectly reasonable, we would think, for Jesus to say, well, I now want to be alone. But under those difficult circumstances, he went and got his disciples and said, come apart with me and rest for a while. So he immediately started to take care of his 12 disciples. As they went to rest on their own, which was entirely legitimate, the crowd started to gather, and he soon found himself feeding the 5,000. At the end of that, it had started to get dark, and Jesus was about to go off to pray. The disciples went down to their boat, and while Jesus was in prayer, he was aware that they were having difficulty in their boat, so he went down and he helped them against the storm and brought them to the other side, where immediately a new crowd had gathered. It seems, therefore, that in Mark chapter 6, we've got 24 hours of Jesus under extreme pressure. Nevertheless, in the midst of it, he is serving, 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 thinking of the other person all the time. Extraordinary. And that's what love is. And if we will take up these two principles, people before performance, service before self, they will be a great help in guarding our hospitality and making it a blessing. Now, a third principle is almost too obvious to mention, but it's the principle of sensitivity. And everybody needs to be sensitive to other members in their flat or home. It may be just wrong to invite somebody home if you've got a sick member of the family or a sad member of the family, or if your family have been neglected. And it may be that it's much easier for the husband to say, you come back and you come back and you come back, and then mention it to the wife on the way home. So we need to be sensitive to other members. The workload will probably fall on the wife. If ever you go to the Lewis home, for example, you'll find there that Gareth is very busy in his share of the hospitality, chopping up his fingers into the soup. He's a hard worker, Gareth, and they set a good example in sharing the load. That's what we need to do. We need to share the load, be sensitive to other members of the home. And then again, I suppose we need to be sensitive to how long we allow people to stay in our homes, because it may be more helpful sometimes to limit it for the sake of the family and for the sake of the people themselves. Hopefully, every Christian who goes to somebody's house will be sensitive to the needs. And I hasten to say, unfortunately, that's not always the case with many guests that we have had since we've been here. Now, that's very common sense, I guess. It will help us a great deal if we start to think about the homes that we appreciate, analyze them, think about what makes them hospitable, what makes them enjoyable and attractive, and then we can seek to have the same type. Now, my last point is under the heading homework, and I just want to suggest a few practical things. First of all, I want to ask you to take hold of the force of our text. Practice hospitality ungrudgingly to one another. It's a command, not a suggestion. I feel that it is a difficult thing to preach on a subject that may just be ignored. In other words, I feel the pain of saying to you what this text says and yet having the whole thing forgotten. So I can only say, by way of tying this tighter, that this is really an issue between you and God. It's His word, it's to His people, and I just want to illuminate it. But we're meant to be hospitable people. Then secondly, we need to get a vision of the possibilities of being hospitable people. Of course, it will mean that we'll meet new people, and that's a help. It will mean deepening friendships, and that's a help. And it may even mean gospel friendships. Let me read to you just a short quote from this article. How I thank God for His gift of people in the churches to which I've belonged and for their ministry, admonition, and support. How sorry I feel for those who have known only the standoffish formalism of church life, which has not been touched by the Spirit of Jesus Christ. The meetings and life together of the body of Christ is the visible flesh and body of the invisible Word. When its life, that is the church's life, together approximates to the biblical guidelines, it possesses great magnetic power within the wider community. Speaking as one who 26 years ago haltingly entered a public service of worship and found decency, order, intelligibility, and a warm welcome, and was converted thereby, and subsequently as a minister of two city churches, having seen many others find Christ in similar circumstances, I can only express the strong hope that local church leaders will pay close attention to the way in which their congregational life affects the wider public. Now, that's just right, isn't it? The possibilities of being hospitable, who can tell? Then we need to start to think in terms of Sunday. It's pretty clear, isn't it, from our St. Helens pattern, that Sunday will be the best inviting day, even if it's not the best hospitable day. So do start to think in terms of Sunday. It may be that you just put on a little extra soup or get a little extra bread. It may just be that today is the sort of day where you invite some people for next week or for some night during the week. But we need to start thinking and planning. And then, by way of practical ideas, we need also to make good use of contact. Contact has been set up just recently within the body of this church. It's an ideal way of bringing single people to families, or single people to single people, or families to single people, but it's a way of bringing people together. So make use of contact. If you're one of the sort of people who've been slow to fill in the form and make your home available at some time in the future, then get onto that. And then we can also make good use of the guest service. And it may be that next week is a good opportunity to invite somebody not only to the service, but to lunch. And finally, I would want to say that I also echo what this writer has said. I am exceptionally thankful for the hospitality that we've received, and you no doubt feel the same. And I think that I can say that we receive probably more invitations than we ever thought possible. And you are probably the same. I hope the same. But we need to take seriously what Peter says. We need to take seriously practicing hospitality because the time is short.